You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to Phillies Backstage. Tom Burgoyne, along with pal John Brazier, and another pal, John, look, we haven't seen in such a long time.
The beauty of sometimes when we honor Wall of Famers, yes. Especially from, you know, when I first started and when you kind of became the best friend of the Fanatic,
yep.
Is that you get to hang out with guys you haven't seen in years. And right now we got one of Harry Callis's favorite name
to say,
and one of Dan Baker's favorite name to say, Rico Bronya. What's up, Rico?
H the K. He was the best, man. Yeah, I can still hear it in the background. I'm doing good. Thanks, guys. Brace, Tom. Great to be here and be a teammate of Scott's. You know, if I can, yeah. We're all teammates of Scott. We're, you know, Scott's, we're in pretty good position.
And there. We're going to have a lot of your teammates and friends, yep. That are coming in. I know Gary Bennett's coming in and Kevin Sefcik's coming in. And
Wayne Gomes. Kevin Sefcik.
Yeah, Sefcik.
Yeah, a lot of guys we haven't seen in a while.
Yeah, a long time. So it's and then other guy. I know Jim Thome's coming in, and I think some Hap Hudson is coming in.
Hap is, too. Yeah, right? Well, he was tight with Scotty, yeah.
So we're going to get
buds.
Dan Held, who you probably
yeah,
played with
yeah,
as well.
Yeah, they're friends, too, yeah.
Yep.
What were you thinking, yep. Rico, when you saw Scott on stage
oh,
in
man.
Cooperstown and accepting that plaque? Pretty cool, huh?
Pretty cool. You know, living in Connecticut, I was, I don't want to say it was a breath away from going up there because I was really close to going up there for the weekend, but I got to see it on TV, and I thought it was, you know, it was just about 85 plus degrees, maybe an inch or two above my where I wanted to, you know, be out there in that hot sun. But
yeah.
Just joking around. It was great to see Scotty. It was just Scott. I mean, you know, listening to him talk and
his speech was incredible.
The same way.
His speech was incredible.
Great.
Just from
sure
the
was.
Heart.
Family.
Just talking about the family, right?
Yeah. Yep. And how about, I mean, when you played, I mean, you started, you came to the Phillies at the time he had just won that year, the Rookie of the Year award. Did you see it in him at an early age?
Oh, man. I mean, he oozed athleticism, you know, and it was okay. He's a basketball player, a linebacker put at third base.
Yes.
And it was just caging, you know, you couldn't cage the end. I mean, he just was going to play with his hair on fire when he was really young. The talent just oozed out of him, the athleticism, the way he ran the bases and would dive after ground balls. And, you know, he tried to make plays no one else would even try to make because
right.
He just knew he could or he believed he could. And he would turn singles into doubles into triples. That was
his baseball instincts were off the charts.
Off the charts. You know, he would just try to make the play rather than ever hold back. So whatever the play was in front of him, even if the count wasn't in his favor and he was hitting, he would try to do the next thing, the next best thing, and believe he could, never doubting for a minute that he couldn't. But I could see why. I mean, he was such a great athlete.
Well, and also you were known as one of the best first basemen,
right.
Probably the best defensive first baseman I've seen. And then you had Scott. So if there's a ball to third or there's a ball to first, I guess you really don't have to worry about.
Absolutely.
Right?
Yeah, the corners. And then I guess when Scott's throwing over to you, it seemed like everything was right there, right? I mean,
you weren't
having to scoop too much when Scott's throwing to you.
He could have pitched. I mean, threw I still have, you know, nerve damage this day from Scott Rowland. I got to thank him later on tonight and tomorrow for that. Can't feel half my finger on my glove hand, honest to God, actually. But he would throw strikes. He could make the throws from any angle, any arm angle, any play. His body he played shortstop at third with an above average third baseman's arm. And the mentality of Mike Schmidt, Brooks Robinson, I can make every play. So we had a good time. You know, we would look at each other across the diamond, and it didn't even take a smile or a wink from that far away. We just kind of give that quick look like, dude, that was awesome. You know, or I got your back, or I'll pick you up, or nice play together, good teamwork. And sometimes we'd wait 20 seconds, and I would be looking a little longer, and there he would pick up his head and look at me.
Hmm.
And we just had so much fun playing defense that I get jealous when I see these other first basemen on the highlights when they show his Hall of Fame stuff.
Yeah.
I'm like, wait a minute now. Wait. And Travis Lee was good. He was very good, you know, and Pujols was good. Okay, he was good. But the first 4 years in Philly, his first 4 years playing, he was, you know, he was doing things with his range and his arm that he probably never did again in his career.
And with back problems, too. I mean, yep. With all that diving, I mean, he you know, we'd
playing
see
on
him.
The turf.
Yeah, you know, before games, you knew the regimen he'd have to go through as far as stretching and rehabilitating that back of his.
Yeah, he played like Larry Bird, you know, there's the Indiana analogy, I guess. But Bird just says the only way I know how to play basketball, dive on the floor, loose balls, you know, everything like that would take extra effort. He just was how he was taught, and that's the way Scott played. And he didn't want to take a day off. You know, we were locker mates, good friends. We talked all the time on and off the field. We went to dinner, and we hung out before game. So we got to talk a lot, and he did not want to not play. He wanted to play every day and bring his A game. Not in any – it was all selfless, too. It was for the team and for the city and – he's just a remark. He didn't want to come out. He didn't want to rest that back. You know, he was going to play.
You know, and he was I believe he was Mr. Basketball in Indiana.
Mm-hmm.
And he was slated to go to Georgia, if I remember correctly, to play basketball.
For Coach Tubbs.
Right? And so that's why I think that's one of the reasons why he was a second-round draft pick, because a lot of people thought he was going to go play basketball at Georgia.
Yeah.
You're right.
Then,
well, Rico, you have a parallel story because
exactly.
I know you were a stud quarterback in high school. And you were thinking about playing. Well, let's go back before that.
Yep.
So growing up, you grew up in Connecticut, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And you grew up in Watertown, or?
That's right. Yeah, I grew up in Watertown, Connecticut, at the Taft School. My dad was a teacher and three-sport coach at the prep school in the Taft School. I also went to Watertown High School, the public school, so both. But yeah,
Did you go to Taft first and then the public?
That's right. Yeah, I went to Taft first, and I was just. My son and daughter, who have since done well there and gone through the school there and done well academically, put me to shame academically. It was just way over my head. I mean, biology and chemistry in the library was too big, and I just wanted to
you don't need
sports.
That aggravation.
But you played baseball, basketball, and football.
They had great uniforms. The facilities were all,
nice.
That's all I wanted to
right.
just go to practice after school. So that caught up with me really quickly, and I went back to the public school. But I ended up playing three sports. Football was a thing. So if you played football and you were getting recruited, even if you were okay in hoops or hockey or, you know, baseball, anything, football was always going to dominate just because of its popularity.
And you're a lefty quarterback.
Yeah, I was lefty quarterback, won state championship on a great, great team. That was a team win, team year. But I was, you know, All-American and got the accolades that a quarterback can get when you do well. And that just sent me all over the country for recruiting my junior, senior year, basically my summer rising senior year. In high school, went everywhere from Southern Cal, you know, USC, where Marinovich,
yep.
Todd White, myself, we visited, you know, and Rodney Pete was the quarterback at the time. And I talked with Rodney about maybe playing baseball and football. So I was out of practice. Larry Smith was the practice. Danny Ford at Clemson, they had just won the national championship in 1981, I believe, at Clemson. So this was like 87, 88. And I graduated in 88. And he flew up like in the four-seater Clemson Tiger, had paw prints on the small plane, flew into a small airport nearby and you know, nowhere, Connecticut, and watched our Thanksgiving
game. I mean,
that's
got to be such a head rush.
Totally.
Dude. As a high school senior, you're getting like wined and dined, you know, by these big, big, big names. Yeah.
It was overwhelming. I mean, the day that they could come see you, like they could have, you know, all the dates they can talk to you on the phone, but they can't have personal contact. The day they could have personal contact with you, it wasn't even 6:30, quarter to 7. School, I'd leave about 7:15, 7:30 from my house at Taft to go to Watertown High School. There were cars, no lie, there were cars lined up in the driveway and then into the street, into North Street. And Boston College was first. And a couple guys were having at it about who was going to be next.
Wow.
Boston College, Wake Forest, Clemson, Southern Cal. And they were all in the parking lot or driveway. And then I couldn't get that one class at school. They called me out of every class, and the teachers, I had math teachers yelling at me. This has gotten ridiculous.
But eventually you settled that if you were going to go the college route, you're going to go Clemson?
Signed with Clemson. Ended up signing a national letter of intent with Clemson to play. It was a football letter because I wanted to play baseball and football there, but the sport that had more scholarships available took the scholarships. And, you know, looking back, they tell you anything you want, you know, everything you want to hear.
Mm.
And I the football program is so big at Clemson, it would have been really hard to be a quarterback there, not be involved in spring football.
Right.
Right.
But do you think if you did that, do you think you would lament or kind of just look back and say, God, I wonder if I should have played baseball or – right?
Yeah, it's a toughie.
Or when you went the baseball route, did you ever think, what would have happened if I went the
more
football
of that.
Route?
More of that. I miss football. Sure. I still miss it. Like, you know, Hunter, my son over here, he's with us today, you know, and my wife, Melissa, they'll tell you on Sunday, you know, when we're watching the Patriots or we're watching Army, Navy or something, or the Army games, go up to West Point. Just something about football. I'd still coach, help out near home with some local high schools, volunteer and stuff like that. So. Yeah. Football, you kick it out of your blood. I mean, once it's in your system.
Well, how did you make that transition, Rico, in terms of leaving football behind and going
Tom, I'm
going to
make one guess. A first-round bonus money?
That helped. That at least made my dad say, hey, wait a minute. Right. You got to pay attention to that. Me, I'm just thinking about, you know, what sport to play, and the money was nice. But it was a first-round pick. To me, it meant more of the team possibly – letting me fail and go through the ups and downs. Football, I mean, football was it. Baseball, I was still like, really? I mean, I don't know how good. I didn't see it yet, the future, big league stuff, even though I thought I was, you know, okay.
Well, obviously, others saw it. If you're
the scouts
draft
tell
pick,
you.
So it's funny. Like, see, but you never thought that in your head? Like, that could be your career?
How many people I've been around in New England or the Northeast said, oh, you just come from the Northeast. No one comes from the Northeast in baseball. You know, it's all like cold weather and you don't play anybody and, you know, which is all false.
Right.
Because, I mean, yeah, I can go down the list of kids that were in our league at Taft with Darren Bragg. He played with the Red Sox and, you know, 15 years in the big leagues. Brad Ausmus, borderline Hall of Fame catcher. He was in Cheshire right next door. So we all played with each other, against each other. Mo Vaughn was at TP, Trinity Pauling. I mean, you can go Juan Nieves was at Avon Old Farms. I mean, so there's just a lot of players, or it's untrue, but you hear that and you kind of believe it. You know, we played 20 games.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
High school season.
Yeah. Well, you were drafted by the Tigers. Always first base? I mean, since you were a quarterback, you never pitched?
You did pitch. Okay. Obviously not professionally.
You just did that with your right hand. But
yeah. Because I can't pick up my left.
Oh, okay. So you were – okay, sorry.
Yeah.
No, I thought maybe you pitched right-handed, and then I'm going to be like, that's a whole story we didn't know.
Yeah.
Who did that? We just interviewed him.
Well, there was a couple. Is that, you know, Billy Wagner obviously broke –
oh, Billy,
He broke his hand.
That's an amazing story.
He broke his arm playing football.
That is
and
a
then
crazy story.
He wanted to play baseball, so he learned to throw left-handed. The other crazy one is we learned a lot in our podcast. We interviewed Milt Thompson. To me, this is the coolest story. So Milt Thompson, who we've known for years, we get him on the podcast, and we talked about, just like we're doing with you, talking about his growing up. He said he was a huge, huge Jackie Robinson fan.
Wow.
And he played second base. But the problem is Milt was left-handed. So the dad said, Milt, you're going to have to change positions. He said, why? He goes, because you can't play second base being left-handed. And so most people, right, most normal people would – change positions,
go to the outfield or
right,
first base.
Or first base. But what does he do?
He becomes right-handed.
He becomes right-handed. So he literally
– I'll switch.
And then he gets to the majors, and he only throws right-handed.
Amazing.
Even though he's naturally left-handed.
And he hits left.
Right, and he hits lefty. So then when he was coaching, he said he would throw left and right to the cage.
Oh, that's terrific for players.
Yep. Yeah, it was terrific. I mean, we had that – we had the one guy, I forget his name, probably about 5 years ago. Remember that had the glove that could go right-handed or left-handed?
Yeah.
But you couldn't switch within the batter.
Correct, yeah.
You had to kind of declare which way you're going.
Yeah, I remember somebody for the Expos. I'm losing his name, but he played for the Expos, and he did that. Greg, I don't know if it on tip of my tongue. But
yeah, it's just
that's a great story. And the one about Billy Wagner, I mean, and then he throws 102-mile-an-hour fastballs.
That's the craziest.
And he is going to be a Hall of Fame, you know, I mean, like, that's ridiculous.
Rico, do you remember your first game?
Very well. Mm-hmm. Yeah, very well. My wife, Melissa, she flew in from Connecticut to see it at Tiger Stadium, August 8th, 1992. Toronto Blue Jays, Dave Steeb.
Oh.
Yep. I mean, right out of the gate, Toronto was terrific. That was the team. Yeah, there. And the Tigers were good. We had Alan Trammell and Cecil Field.
Yeah.
You know, we had Jack Morris, with great team, too, when I got called up. But Toronto was, you know, Roberto Alomar, Paul Molitor. You can go down the list. They had that.
Yeah.
They had Henke as the closer and Dwayne Ward.
Phillies played him the next year in the World
Series.
Right.
And
lost.
Yeah, yeah, right. So it's that team. It was a lot of that team. Yep. And they, Dave Steve had me 3-2. I think I was either 1-2 or 0-2. My first at bat, fought back to 3-2, and he threw a wicked sinker that he got me jammed, and I blooped it down the left field line and slid. Was able to go for two and slide into second.
Beautiful. There it
is. Yeah, and Roberto Alomar got the – it was close play. And my head was down buried running. And
no replay back then.
No replay. I was safe. I was safe all the way. And he said, hey, congratulations. Hope there are many more. In so many words.
Yeah,
and
great.
So I thought that was really nice.
That's really cool.
I'll never forget Roberto Alomar.
Classy thing to do.
And you got traded early in your career to the Mets, right?
I did. Right at the end of
which we're not happy about, Rico. I mean, the fact that you played for the Mets.
Well, some of our friends, like Ricky Pitalico, played for the Mets. We've had some others.
He should have turned that down. I don't care how much money they threw.
He's such a homer, Rico.
It's a good rivalry.
Someone mentioned that
play on both sides of it was kind of fun.
Someone mentioned that they were going to do, or maybe they did, a candy bar. Was there going to be a Rico Bronya candy bar?
Oh, I don't know.
Someone in my office just told that to me, and I tried looking it up. I didn't see anything.
Oh, we know there's a Rico Bronya podcast.
Yeah, and everyone thinks that's mine. It's not mine.
It's not you.
No,
yeah,
it's not mine.
It's a guy from WFAN. Right?
And they do it. It's very popular. Like, it's actually the name only would possibly detract or take away from its popularity.
Have they ever had you on that podcast?
I have been on it, yep. They contacted me early on and, you know, asked for permission and all that stuff. I'm like, dude, if anyone's going to listen to your podcast named after me, go for it. And, you know, 2 years later, it's like the most popular Mets podcast.
Yeah.
All right, but they do a great job, man.
So then you get traded over to the Phillies in 1996.
Well, even before that, because I wanted to get into it a little bit, Rico. I know you had problems with your back.
Yeah.
It's like severe arthritis. I don't want to mispronounce the name of the condition.
I get it wrong. But, yeah. Ankylosing spondylitis.
Okay. Yeah.
AS, so ankylosing spondylitis, pretty rare.
And was it, did you always have that, or when you were in New York, is that when it was flaring up and it was diagnosed?
It's a really funky disease. I was born with it because I was born with the gene, and that's specific for the disease. Doesn't mean you necessarily get the disease, but you're prone to it. And I, sure enough, the symptoms looking back on my childhood all checked the boxes, but we didn't know what boxes were, you know, to check. We had no idea when I was young why I would have certain skin rashes or would have severe body cramping or would have, like, needle-like pain in my heels when I walked, like you're walking on glass.
So that was going on your whole childhood.
Weird symptoms. Very strange. When I was diagnosed properly, long story short, which was like about when I was 19, 20 years old, which they say could be at its worst when you're between 19 and 21. The thing has some severe common denominators when you are accurately diagnosed, but it's hard to diagnose a patient with it. And then looking back on all the stuff, the doctor's like, did you have this? Did you have this red eye? You know, a line across my right eye that looked like a pen mark. It was so thin, a straight line. That's how he actually came to ask me about my other symptoms. He said, I was in Western Ontario, Canada. You wonder why things happen. I'm in AAA doing very poorly, and I think it's God-driven. I really do. I believe, you know, my faith. And I was doing so bad, they sent me to AA. Well, you know, 2 weeks later, I'm in all this pain in my back and everything. I'll try to make the long story short. I went for testing day after day, a couple weeks. And one doctor saw my eye. My eye. And now I got hip pain, back pain, heel pain, ligament pain, you know, mental pain. Now I'm thinking my career's over. And he just says, you know, your eye's red. I'm like, man, it's always been like that. It bothers me in the summer. I get like this iritis. And he goes, yeah, but you got a line across. He goes, I mean, the guy, I can almost get the chills. Think about it. He comes back. He goes, I'm going to run these tests on your blood that we took, you know, for infections and stuff like that. They were coming up negative. And he came back, I don't know if it was the next day or soon after. He said, I want you to take this medicine. I think you have this. And, man, did I run sprints in the outfield.
Awesome.
Yeah, that night that I started to take the meds.
And it kicked in that quickly?
Well, yeah, it was an anti-inflammatory, yep. and it was it's an inflammation disease. So it was all of a sudden I was 10 years old again. And I was like, you know, I went back. I'm hugging the guy, you know, I'm jumping in his arms. I was like, what did you get, you know? And it was just an anti-inflammatory medication at the time, low dose and all that. But it was the first that I'd ever taken, right. you know, prescription strength.
Yeah.
And then you just had to manage that, obviously, the rest of your...
Yeah, it's a long story. Sorry, I always drag it on. It's hard to keep short, but... I've always, when my playing career went along, it was hard, but I had great doctors, Dr. David Podell, great support from my family. Melissa's unbelievable. And they kept changing my medication, or I shouldn't say kept changing. We kept experimenting, like in the off season. I didn't want to experiment during the season because I'm able to play. But if it stopped working, I had a lot of pain, and I think I needed to try something else. We'd always go home and, you know, try. So the doctors were awesome. That's why the Mets, you know, were scared of keeping me. Yeah. And I don't blame them 1 second. I didn't even know what was really going on.
Right.
And then I came to Philly, and I'm like, the Philly thing caught me.
Nice.
The Rocky Balboa, right?
Right, right.
I
remember. You were a big Rocky guy.
Big
totally
Rocky guy.
That.
We went there today with Hunter, my son, and we did the whole thing. The steps.
Nice.
And
I think, didn't we do a video?
Yeah, we did a music video.
I remember that.
Video
too.
Dan.
Yeah,
video
totally
Dan.
Remember that.
Yeah. Went down as Mark.
Italian Market.
Italian Market, yep. Yeah. We ran the steps. And so but the Philly fans, the whole Philly atmosphere, the neighborhood feel of like, this is your neighborhood hockey team, you know, that's kind of how I felt, knowing what that felt like coming from Connecticut. This is your local team. It wasn't a big... So I was in. I was hooked.
That's great.
And I decided, I got to figure this out, man. I got to play. I got to play every day. I love Philly. And it really worked. You know, played 150-something games almost every year.
Right.
Seemed like
something
like that. So
yeah.
Scott and I were out there a lot together.
And it was tough because, you know, the team was, you know, a new manager. A lot of growing pains with the team and the manager, I think. And
Tito,
I wish that team had seen more wins, more success. But you guys,
we were growing. We were starting to grow, and then it just fell apart. We relied so much on Schilling. He was, he was our pitcher. You know, every day we wanted him on the bump. He was so good.
Yeah, because I think we had. I know Mark Portugal. We picked him up.
Yep.
Right. We had Bobby Munoz, Mike Mims, Calvin Maduro, Mark Leiter.
Leiter.
Tyler Green.
Yep.
Mike Grace, who's here.
Gracie. Yep.
So
Paul Bird came in and did a good job.
Paul Bird came in,
that's true.
And then you know what's interesting about that year, 1997, is that you guys, 30-70 after their first 100 games, but you guys went 38-24 the last 62 games, which was the best record
in
the NL.
Best record in the National League.
So I think a lot of people were thinking.
Number one.
Wow.
Over the Braves, everybody.
They could be contenders.
It didn't carry into 98, though.
Well, 98, do you remember the.
We signed Andy Ashby, I think, that offseason. We were really happy about that.
That's a good sign.
And do you remember the first game of 1998 at all? It was the opening day.
Braves?
I think it was the Mets. Albert Castillo, he played for the Mets, right?
I do remember.
And it was the longest opening, scoreless game on opening day.
Schilling,
We lost 1-0 in 14 innings.
Was that in Philly or
no?
New York?
No,
it was at Shea. When Albert Castillo had a walk-off single.
Yeah, I remember that. He had a base hit to right fielder, double to right center, I think. And the next day, I think outlighter threw, and we won game two in a close game up there. That was Bobby Valentine, I think, was managing the Mets. I remember that. Yeah, very well. Very well, absolutely. We had high expectations that season because, you know, Scott Rolen,
right?
Yeah,
Desi Relaford, you know, Mickey Morandini. We might have still had Stalker. Desi might not have been there early on.
And you acquired Marlon Byrd, right?
We got Birdie, yep.
Abreu came in 98.
Abreu was ridiculous.
And Doug Glanville.
That team. Yeah, and Greg Jeffries was
Greg Jeffries.
Left field.
Yeah.
And we had Leiby. Leiby became an all-pro, you know.
Sure.
All-pro, all-star catcher. Mm-hmm. And I played first, and we just had the pitching started to come on. And, you know, I don't know if it was the depth. You know, you got to pitch, man. I mean, we're relying on Schill a lot. I think Leiter did a good job closing out games for a while until Gomesy came in that role. But we had it. I think Schill got hurt.
He did.
Like maybe in a July or August kind of second half of 98 when we were tight. We were pretty close with the Braves. It wasn't far out. We weren't far out. It was within a handful of games.
Well, in 1999, Schilling and Rolland got hurt in August.
Okay, so that's what I'm getting the year mixed up.
Yeah, because you guys went 1-18 in 1999. You went 1-18 from August 28th to September 14th.
That's what it was.
We set you guys way back. But
memory was trying to block that.
That's all right. Unfortunately, the Phillies weren't spending money at that time. So we weren't really, put it this way, in 2000, the big signings were Jahlil Leach, Mark Bauman. Brown, I don't even know. And then Chris Brock. You know, we got Chris Brock for Bobby Saleh. Yeah. So it's not like we were going out there and getting like we are now. We're getting Trey Turner and, you know.
What year did we sign Tartable? Was that 99?
Danny Tartable. Well, that's funny you said that because Danny Tartable was 97. We had signed one of my favorites who we're going to have on the podcast. I interviewed him for another thing. Rex Hudler, who is one of my all-time favorite characters.
He still does radio with
TV
with
the Royals.
He was in town with the Angels.
He was in town with the Angels, right? Yeah, with the Angels. Yeah. He actually put on a jersey and walked around. We had the weekend he was here, it was photo day where the players walk around the field and fans take pictures of him. And
Hud, we got
him a jersey, and he walked around, and he was the best.
That's him.
Just animated.
He's the best.
Having fun with everybody. Absolutely love that. But that's, 97 was tough because we signed Rex Hudler. You came in that year, obviously, Mark Portugal. And then we signed Danny Tartable, who I think had seven at-bats. Yeah. And then he broke his foot, right, in the batting, hitting a ball off his foot. That's also the year that, if you remember, J.D. Drew – we signed him. We drafted him.
That's right.
And then he refused to sign.
And he didn't want to sign with the Phillies.
And he went and played in the St. Paul Saints. And
yeah, that's right. And then that's why Pat Burrell, when he did get signed, like the following year, whenever it was shortly after, was such a hit. I mean, he was not only a great player,
right,
but he was such a hit with the fans because he wanted to come to Philly.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly, and it was like, no, I want to go to Philly. And they were just went through the whole J.D. Drew thing.
And then the opposite of that is Trey Turner last year. Yeah. Right. Trey Turner, when he signed with the Phillies, he said, I was watching the playoffs on TV, and I could feel the crowd through the TV, and he said, I want to be a part of that.
Yeah.
Now, that's the exact opposite, and Bryce Harper, obviously. Bryce Harper, was talking about how he wants his kids to be raised Philadelphians and be Philadelphians, and everyone in Philadelphia, both when Trey Turner and Bryce Harper said that, you could just feel goosebumps.
Oh, yeah. Were you watching
the games, Rico? Could you sense the excitement here in Philadelphia last year?
No doubt. I mean, Melissa will tell you, she's right. We watched when Bryce hit that home run. It was kind of a football day, right? It was late in the year. Yep. It was late in the afternoon. The sun's going down, a little misty, a little cool. Got the hoodie on, maybe a jacket. So it had a great the setting, and the place was rocking.
Was.
I turned the volume all the way up. Melissa will tell you, definitely turned all the way up. And I'm like, he's locked in. If he ever hits one, boom, it was like, I'm just doing circles around. I can't believe that's a Philly. It's going to remember that forever. That's a forever moment. It was, right? It's a never forget.
If we hold on to the, right now we're recording this on Thursday, September 21st. We're holding on to the top spot. So if we have home games here, you guys have to come down because you have to experience this ballpark. I'm telling you, when the first game last year was against the Braves, and it was game three, NLDS, right?
Yeah.
When Rhys Hoskins hit the home run, the crowd was already just waiting for an excuse to go nuts.
Yeah.
And when he hit that home run, it was the loudest I've ever heard a stadium, ever, including concerts.
It's amazing.
It was loud.
Yeah, I was trying to explain to Hunter how this place goes nuts. I mean, I didn't experience that day, but I had many 60,000 on a July 4th with Schilling out there against the Yankees.
Yeah, the ballpark was different. I mean, I guess for you just walking in here today, it's a different experience. I mean, do you look back saying, oh, I wish I played in some of those baseball-only ballparks? I guess Camden Yards, I think, came in 92.
A couple of them started to be built.
But did you have any that were any ballparks that were your favorites or –
Dodgers. Something about Dodger Stadium was always pretty cool. Maybe it was because I grew up and they were always playing the Yankees, and it was like they felt like otherworldly. Like they're way over there on the left coast, but it's Hollywood. And
everyone said that's a great place to hit because of the batter's eye.
It's just a great place to hit. Shea Stadium, the former was a great, and the Vet was a great place to hit.
Mm.
The Vet, you could do things that you're gonna get ground balls through because of the quick turf. So you're gonna get those a lot, a few extra of those, probably, especially if you've got a little speed. And the ball carried everywhere, especially in the summertime when the turf got warm. So you could leave anywhere in the ball. You didn't have to pull it. You could leave anywhere.
Yeah. How'd you like playing at Wrigley?
Oh, so cool. It was so cool. Yeah, it was a great place. I just remember their teams weren't great, and it was a fun. I made sure my swing was right when I went in there because I thought I faced up pretty well against their pitching, and this is a series where I could, you know, I had to put some extra points on my onto my average and stuff like that. But the grass was a mile high. You know, you couldn't get a ground ball through, so you had everything in the air. I mean, you just adjust your swing for the series.
Well, you played in the Red Sox for a year.
Yep.
Could you compare the two ballparks? Everybody's got an opinion.
Yeah.
You like Fenway or Wrigley better?
Well, I grew up Fenway because my dad was born and raised in the north end of Boston.
Yes.
So I have to say that.
Of course.
But that being said, Wrigley was much cooler.
Yeah, yeah.
Way cooler. And I played a long time in the National League, so maybe that's part of it. But Wrigley is really cool.
It's blazing hot outside. You get in your car to turn on the AC to get cold air pumping, but it blows hot air out. This issue is commonly caused by low refrigerant due to leaks in the AC system. You want an easy, all-in-one solution that will restore the cold air in no time. AC Pro Recharge Kits make restoring cold air easy for even those with zero DIY experience in less than 10 minutes. Save time and money versus going to a shop by picking up an AC Pro Recharge Kit today. Be a pro with AC Pro.
Who was the best pitcher that you had their number? And then conversely, who is the, I don't want to say journeyman, but who is the regular pitcher that for some reason just vexed
I got them
you?
Both. Yeah, we didn't prep for this either. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
No.
But I just, you know, Frank Castillo threw me three different types of changeups, and I was, you know, and he was a under 500 pitcher with the Cubbies, and I couldn't hit him. You know, I never was, I don't know why I didn't ever sit on a changeup back then. I'm like, I'm going to get the fastball. I never got the fastball. And he had like two or three different types of changeups. So, you know, Harry the K came in one day and he goes, Brogna, I got these stats here and it just baffles the mind, you know. 1-for-18 off this Frankie guy he's pitching today. How in the world is that? You know, his average against is 282. He gives up a home run a night, you know, all these things. And I go, Harry, I don't know, man. He throws the invisible ball to me. I don't pick him up. And John Smoltz.
Smoltz, okay.
I think he mentioned it one time on the air what, you know, the hitters that he had trouble with. And when my name was mentioned with Tony, you know, I think he said Tony Gwynn first. I hope he did.
Right, nice.
Yeah, and then it was like, you know, it was a 340 or 350 lifetime. But
yeah.
Yeah, he's awesome, had great stuff, obviously, Hall of Famer and all that. But something about, you know, you just pick up some guys' release points different or don't pick them up. And you just see it longer and you see it better. And
what was your approach to Smoltz? Like, when you're coming up to bat, are you looking for a certain area? Are you looking for a certain pitch?
Yeah, but I felt like he came up with a couple pitches for me. Like, that's how big my ego is right now. So I felt like he developed, because he threw pitches that he never threw before. Like, I always study, you know, study pitchers, and I'm like, where did he get that cutter? He never threw a split before. Or that changeup's a different type of change. It's not a straight changeup. It's a fade, you know. So he had a tremendous arm, so he could tinker. And I felt like at the end of the day, he's going to throw you a fastball to challenge you. He's got that, you know, 95 or whatever arm. And at the end of the day, he can throw one middle up, middle of the plate, center cut, a little elevated, and say, let's go. Because that was his mentality, what's, you know, probably made him so great. So I didn't fear that. I always thought, like, okay, I'm going to see a changeup. He's got a great slider, but somewhere in here, he's going to throw a fastball, and challenge me.
Well, how about your – we talked about it a little before, your defense. Now, it is still – around Philadelphia, you can still – if you could be at a bar somewhere and really sit next to the guy next to you and say, oh, you know, defense, whatever first – defensive first baseman's come up, it's always like, yeah, that Rico Bronya can play defense. You know, it's like anywhere, Rico, anywhere you are. And so you must get some satisfaction out of that.
Oh, yeah.
And did you, when you were playing, you know, take satisfaction you must have just in your defense?
Yeah, totally. Part of it is, in you know, self-deprecating maybe, but not really. Like, as a first baseman, I had to do other things. I wasn't the pure power hitter of a Mark McGwire or Jim Thome, what turned out to be, you know. So I felt like I could play defense, make that part of my game, save our team some runs, and have fun with it at the same time. You know, we talk about hockey in the Northeast, but I grew up playing a lot of street hockey. And I was always the goalie, and I was a left-handed guy, and I always took pride in the glove saves. Yeah, I mean, and you know, not letting goals go by. And I was always a goalie playing street hockey, whether we played on the ice and in sneakers at night, or we just played in the parking lot. We did all a lot of my friends growing up. They were hockey players.
Yeah, probably improved your reflexes, right?
Oh, man, I loved it.
You're saying at night, you can't see the ball, and it's just it's the ball's on or the puck
is
on.
Oh, pitch dark, no lights. Yeah, yeah, the reflection off the ice, you know, the ice wasn't real ice. It was kind of a glassy thing.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, no, totally. I mean, it's freezing, and they're firing tennis balls at you with these hockey sticks that they made, you know, they curved the... They made them wicked.
The Mylex?
Of course.
Mylex sticks?
Yeah, totally. They made them wicked. So I grew up playing that all the time in our backyard and even really liked it.
Yeah.
And that, I think, took, you know, helped me a little bit in baseball, maybe more than a little bit.
Yeah. Did you have a guy that you admired as a defensive first baseman?
No, I thought you were going to say goalie.
Or a goalie.
Jerry Cheevers.
Perrant. Yeah, I know the answer. I know the right answer.
But like growing up, did you, were there guys back then, it's like, oh, that guy could play first base?
I mean, Don Mattingly and Keith Hernandez were in my backyard. Yeah. But I watched, being a Red Sox fan growing up, again, with my dad being a Red Boston guy, I saw a lot of more American League games growing up on TV. The Red Sox were always on if we had a game on. And so I got to see Don Mattingly when I got into my teenage years, early high school. You know, he had a poster of Don Mattingly on my door.
Yeah, yeah.
The eye black, and he was not really shaven. And, you know, he had the sweat, and he had the wristbands with tape. And I was like, when I was doing that in Philly, I'm not wearing sticker eye black.
No, it's a real
no
stuff.
No way, man. I want bubbles when you start to sweat. That thing's got to smear. Not smear it on purpose like they do now.
So right.
You know, smear it. Let it smear naturally. I mean, that stuff at the end of the game, you gotta take a glob of Vaseline to take it off.
Yeah, yeah.
And
Harper's got it all over his face
all
the time.
He's legit, though. We'll let him do what he wants. Yeah.
Now, do you remember back then, because obviously I was involved, but we had a lot of celebrities that came through the clubhouse, you know, back in your days. We had, you weren't, it was before you. We had Hootie and the Blowfish come through.
Yeah, but I got a couple good pictures at home, too.
Yeah, so we had Luke Perry, was that Luke Perry?
Luke Perry.
Right, remember it came through the actor. He threw out the first pitch, from Beverly Hills 90210.
And the show was big back then, too.
Yeah. Meatloaf, did he come through when you were there?
I don't think I saw him.
That might have been before you.
Yeah.
Cool. I
met Garth Brooks. I mean, we hung out. Okay. I mean, he might have came in with the Pirates, but I think, you know, you connected us. Garth Brooks is like, you know, at the time, it's Garth Brooks.
He's huge.
Yeah, I mean, he's the biggest guy in the planet. You know, his music was off the charts.
And did you have your own fan group, too? I know Randy Wolf had the Wolf Pack.
Yeah, Padilla's Lutia. And
Rico, I don't know if you had your own group.
I mean, 700 level.
Yeah, there were signs up there that summer. I think when the kids started to come back to college, so late in the summer, early fall, all of a sudden up on the left, you know, in the vet, you'd see all in the upper second deck in the left
the cheap
field.
Seats. The
cheap seats. All the signs. They were awesome. And in 99, maybe even started in 98, but we were hanging on and not playing, you know, we were in it kind of later than normal. Not like they are nowadays, but we were in it. We were an exciting young team. You know, we had a lot of single guys, you know, on the team. They just had they had all their names out there.
Yeah, everybody had
their
favorite.
I don't know if I had my own fan club or anything.
I think they had
like
Bronies Bolognas. I think there was
could have been
something. There were a couple signed this, you know, but no, it's Scott Rowland and Lieberthal. Those guys were the.
Hopefully you forgot Johnny Fresh and Lemon Lime, who were up in left field.
I don't remember.
Good, yeah. You don't want to. That's good. We don't want to go down
that was Johnny Fresh, and his the backup best friend of the Fanatic was Lemon Lime.
Yeah, it was.
It's good you have amnesia.
It was a mess. Yeah. I know you want to get to the quiz, but before we do, I know when you left baseball, Rico, you really got into coaching, and I know you've coached, football and baseball, basketball. Is there any sport that you won't coach? Is there any?
Good question. I don't think I've ever been asked that. Except last year when the athletic director at Watertown High School, because I'm doing the baseball now at Watertown, said, you know, we're not getting a lot of applications in for girls volleyball.
There you go.
Do you know anything about volleyball?
He said it to me in the spring, and I looked at him, I said, I know absolutely nothing. I can organize a practice. I can get the start time, you know, fundamentals, stretch.
Yeah.
But after that, I'm reading a book, you know, or more than that. But I looked at him, I said, I just don't know that sport.
Have you tried pickleball?
I have not tried it, no.
This pickleball is, like, just exploding.
It is.
Yeah. I actually played this morning, by the way.
Did you?
Yeah, I did. Look I went to the you. Gym, and I wasn't going to go play pickleball. I was in the gym doing my thing, and next thing you know, I see a friend of mine in the back of the gym playing. He's, like, waved me over. Next thing you know, I'm out there playing.
You feeling okay? Or
feeling all right, yeah.
All right.
Not a whole lot of
it. Yeah.
You know what sport I don't think I would coach? Sorry to interject there, you guys, you know, going over injuries and and us all getting, you know, to that age. But I don't think I would coach soccer because I just love football, and it should not be played. Football is football, not football. It's football, and it's played in the same season.
Bad
timing.
It is.
And at certain schools that I've been at, they've always had a little jealousy against each other.
Yeah.
That being said, my son picked up lacrosse when he was really young.
Huh.
And he ended up playing baseball, too, but that was the coolest sport.
I agree.
Got to see him play for many years. What a great sport.
Yep. I loved
that
it.
I mean, it's football. It's everything.
It's football
basketball, hockey.
A lot of basketball.
And they hit. There's physical. Yeah,
you've grown an appreciation for it.
Yep.
Lacrosse is cool.
That's how I was with my, when my son started playing soccer. I was the same way, Rico. I was always,
football. I love soccer. I love soccer.
No, but I was always
the same
way.
Your family was in it.
But no. But once you start seeing your, you know, a child do, you know, play and do well, you do form an appreciation. I have a son who's a gymnast, too. So, you know, like, wow, you know, you really have such an appreciation.
Yeah, well,
for
the strength in a, you know.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
That takes to do well. That's amazing.
It's awesome.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Yeah.
All right, Rico, are you ready
for the
quiz?
Sorry about the soccer thing.
No, it's all right. Well, I guess you didn't watch Ted Lasso then.
Ted Lasso was good.
That was good. All right, so I have a quiz. It is 8 questions. It is multiple choice.
Holy moly.
You can use Melissa as a lifeline, or Hunter. You can use your family as for one lifeline.
One.
You can use Tom for one lifeline.
That's right? Two.
Because he doesn't know. So
I'm usually not so
much. And if you get 6 out of 8, Tom, what does he win?
We get a T-shirt?
We'll go to the Scott Brandeth prize closet and we'll get you something.
A mystery gift?
Like. A mystery gift,
yes. Because unfortunately, I think I'm running out of backstage Burgoyne and Brazier.
We only had
t-shirts.
Like 10 printed.
Right. I need to get my boy Scott Soffin to get us some more. All right.
I transferred out of an academic school now. Remember that, please. I left
with this quiz.
School. Yeah.
This is easy.
When's the last test you took?
This is about your life. You'll be fine.
We'll be fine.
Oh, boy.
Question number one. You are from Watertown, Connecticut, as we discussed. Which of these celebrities is not originally from Connecticut? So 3 of these celebrities are from Connecticut. One's not. Tell me who's not, right? So singer-guitarist John Mayer, author John Grisham, P.T. Barnum, Meg Ryan. So who's not from Connecticut? John Mayer.
Grisham.
John Grisham is correct. And do you have a reasoning behind that? Or
his accent.
Right, he's from Mississippi.
I remember I used to read some of his books, and I'd hear him talk in interviews, and just you don't have that accent coming from Connecticut.
No, that's true. All his books are
from
based
Oxford,
in
Mississippi.
Mississippi. It's a southern accent.
Nice. He went to Mississippi State.
Yep.
All right, 1-for-1. All right, you were drafted in the first round of the 1988 draft by the Tigers, as we mentioned. Which of these players was not drafted in the first round that year? So 3 of them are first-round draft picks. One was not a first-round draft pick. Okay.
One was not, yeah.
One was not. Which one was not? So you got Charles Nagy, Brian Jordan, Jim Abbott, Kenny Lofton. Charles Nagy, Brian Jordan, Jim Abbott, Kenny Lofton.
Kenny Lofton.
Kenny Lofton's correct. He was a 17th rounder.
Really?
That's a good hit on a 17th rounder.
Big hit.
That is a good
hit.
Right? Speed.
Yeah. Ooh.
Yeah, all right. All right.
You are 2-for-2. All right.
Yeah, I don't want to break this.
I'm excited about this question because I'm really curious to see whether, you know, when you turn down Clemson, whether you in turn followed Clemson to see who potentially would have been your competition. Okay?
Yep.
So, as I mentioned, you're going to play quarterback at Clemson. Who was their starting quarterback from 1989 to 1991 of which you would have been in competition with? Right?
Yep.
Was it DeShane Cameron? Was it Reginald Dwight? Was it Vincent Fernier? Or was it Calvin Broaddus?
DeShane.
It was DeShane Cameron. Because the other 3, Reginald Dwight is Elton John, Vincent Fernier is Alice Cooper,
okay,
and Calvin Broaddus is Snoop Dogg.
All right, so I got it right?
You got it right.
I didn't know any of that other stuff.
Thank God.
Yeah, I mean,
so Shane Cameron. So you did follow it then?
Yep.
Right? When
we talked. Okay. And that just rang a bell. You know, not the first name rang a bell, I think. Yeah, we talked.
3 for 3, Tom. How about that?
We talked about maybe being roommates, actually.
Really?
Yeah, quarterbacks.
So your first minor league team in single A, because I know you played rookie ball, but in single A was Lakeland Tigers, right?
Yes.
Which one of these guys was not a teammate on that single A team in Lakeland?
Yep.
Okay?
Yep.
Ricardo Ingram, Rusty Meacham, Anthony Figazzato, Steve Searcy.
Searcy wasn't. Ricardo Ingram, I'm going to go with, but Searcy was on a rehab. So that makes him a teammate.
Yeah.
All right,
yeah.
So I got it wrong.
No, you haven't guessed yet. You haven't guessed yet.
I haven't guessed.
So it's Ricardo Ingram, Rusty Meacham, Anthony Figazzato, and Steve Searcy. Which was not the teammate?
I have no idea who that Anthony was.
Well, then go with that one.
Go with that one.
Yeah, I know Rusty, yeah, Ricardo, and I was friends with all those guys. I have no idea.
You are correct, because Anthony Figazzato
works in our entertainment
department.
We give him a little plug on the podcast.
You gave me a lot of, without a lifeline, you gave me a lot of rope on that one.
Yeah, I did. That's all right.
That's a good baseball name.
But
he does have a good baseball name.
At least the way I answered it, I have absolutely no idea who that is.
And now Anthony's going to listen to our podcast. We'll have one more podcast listener.
We bribe our listeners.
All right, you're a 4 for 4. You're on a roll. Oh. All right. I never know whether people know their stats. Yeah, I'm amazed when you actually could remember in detail that opening day. Mm-hmm. How many major league home runs did you have in your major league baseball career? Do you know that off the top of your head? That's all right. I'll give you the choices. Is it 106, 92, 89, 125? 106, 92, 89, 125. You could use your lifeline.
I had 125.
I had it as 106.
Okay, yeah. I thought it was 100. I was going to.
Did you know that?
Yeah.
You should have used
100. I knew it was 100. I could have used. I felt confident. All right, my ego caught up with me there.
All right, this is a tough.
I picked the highest number.
Of course.
This is a tough. This might be a tough one. 1997 was your first year with the Phillies. Who led the Phillies in batting average that year with a minimum of 200 at-bats? 200 at-bats. So,
yep.
Mickey Morandini, Scott Rolen, Greg Jeffries, Medre Cummings.
Can you say that again? The four guys? Scott Rolen,
Mickey Morandini, Greg Jeffries, Greg
Jeffries, Medre Cummings. Gosh.
200 at-bats isn't a lot.
That's why Medre's in there, because he didn't play every day.
Right.
That's why it's sneaky.
That's very sneaky.
So I'm going to draw a lifeline, and I don't know. You got a phone on you?
Way John's looking, I'll say Medre Cummings
is correct.
All right.
All right.
I was leaning there, but that was a sneaky.
That was
a sneaky one. 303.
I can't be a win for me, though.
Yes, it is. You got it.
You got the lifeline.
You coached the Reading Fightin' Phils in 2018 and 2019.
Yep.
Who led the team in 2018 in home runs? Okay, in 2018, your first year.
Yeah.
Was it Derek Hall, Devi Grujan, Dominic Tomsha, or Zach Green? Was it Hall, Grujan, Tomsha, or Green?
I'm going to go with Greeny. Was it Hall?
It was Grujan.
Wow,
yeah, 21.
Okay. Grujan, the catcher.
Yeah,
oh, my gosh. He had tremendous power.
All you have to do is get this last one.
Yeah, but that one's that's a good one right there.
It comes down to the eighth
comes
and
down
final
to last
question.
One. You played for the Phillies, Braves, Mets, and Red Sox, right?
Phillies, Braves, Mets, and Red Sox.
Yeah, you played for the Phillies, Braves, Reds, and Mets, and Red Sox, right? Correct.
Yeah, and the Tigers.
And the Tigers, right. All right. Well,
I thought that might have been part of the question.
No, I'm taking the Tigers out because this is more, you know, obviously Braves and Mets are rivals and Red Sox, you know, on the East Coast.
Tigers was for 3 seconds
So which player did not play for all four teams? So three of these guys played for all four teams in their career and probably some others. Yep. But they played for at least, with the Phillies, Braves, Mets, and Red Sox, because you did it.
Yep.
One of these guys did not. Three of these guys did. Okay?
Yep.
Bruce Chen, Billy Wagner, Ruben Amaro Jr., Paul Byrd. Who did not play for the Phillies, Braves, Mets, and Red Sox? Bruce Chen, Billy Wagner, Ruben Amaro Jr., Paul Byrd.
Ruben didn't play.
Ruben did not play. You won.
Yeah, Ruben played. He played with Cleveland.
He played Cleveland, Phillies, and Angels. But Bruce Chen, Billy Wagner, and Paul Byrd all played for the
Phillies. I was
going
to say Billy Wagner.
No, Wagner played all four of those. He had a little. You forget that he played for the. I'm starting to
Houston.
Houston.
Yes, and I'm starting to get to know, because I don't know if you guys do that immaculate grid. There's a you have to do it.
What's that?
Every day at 9 o'clock, a new puzzle comes out. I'll show it to you when we get off the air. But it's immaculate grid, immaculategrid.com, and it has it'll have like you know three teams, maybe two on one column, and two teams, and then milestones like 3,000 strikeouts in his career, 300 lifetime batter, All Star, and you got to just plug in someone that played for the Nationals and the Red Sox, and it's a cool thing.
That is cool.
Because I've been doing this all the time, now all of a sudden I'm like,
you got good trivia.
Now I've got like good trivia in my head.
It's all right there.
Well, Rico, this is awesome. It's great to see Melissa again, yourself. Yeah. Nice to meet Hunter. And I'm really looking forward to this weekend honoring Scott Rolen and having all your teammates in there.
Yeah.
Should be great with Scott. I mean, good for him. You know, I mean, it's an amazing accomplishment. The city's going to be pumped up with the series. You know, these games are all very meaningful, obviously, and it should be rocking. But also with Scott here, I think that'll be a special weekend.
Awesome. Well, enjoy the weekend.
Thanks, Tom.
Thanks for coming on, Rico.
Yeah.
And thanks for tuning in, everybody. We'll catch you next time on Phillies Backstage.